got a great show going on this evening, an evening with Houdini and Doyle. Harry Houdini, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. For the beginning of the show, David Jayer, my guest, The Witch of Lime Street, Seance, Seduction, and Houdini in the Spirit World. We've got links up to our guest site and to the book. You can find it there at Coast to Coast AM. A little later on in the show, Matt Wingert, his book, Conan Doyle and the Mysterious World of Light, 1887 to 1920, talking about Sir Arthur Conan Doyle and the occult. That's what we have on tap for you this evening. And if you are a fan of reading like I am and keeping in the vein of what we're discussing this evening, there's a great novel called Nevermore, a novel by William Hjortsberg, and you could find it on Amazon.com. It is a great fictional tale of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle and Harry Houdini teaming up to search for a literary-minded killer. It is one of my all-time favorite novels. Again, putting them in the detective world, kind of like the series on Fox, where they are trying to crack a crime that's being committed in the vein of Edgar Allan Poe stories. And then they entangle this great story with the ghost of Edgar Allan Poe visiting Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, trying to help him out with this crime. It is a great story, fascinating read, so make sure if you're looking for something to fill your time and read and really enjoy, I recommend Nevermore, a novel. Again, our guest this evening is talking about the very real story of the battle between Harry Houdini and the Witch of Lime Street, Marjorie. We'll talk about that and more when we return. Plus, we'll be taking your calls in the next half an hour right here on Coast to Coast AM. Harry Houdini, truly one of the greatest master illusionists in the world, escape artist like no other before or since, and also the debunker of the spiritualist movement. He was fascinated and intrigued by it. He wanted there to be proof, but was not so easy to fold and believe in these things. He believed in cold readers and very good cold readers. One of his main battles was with psychic Marjorie, as we're discussing this evening. The book is called The Witch of Lime Street, Seance, Seduction, and Houdini in the Spirit World. David Jayer, our guest this evening. David, knowing what we know about what a promotional juggernaut Harry Houdini was, always kind of on the cusp and forefront of promotions and keeping his name relevant and out there, do you think there was any collusion between him and Marjorie? Because they both, as you mentioned, benefited so much from this battle.
Well, I don't think there was any conscious collusion between the two of them, but, you know, absolutely, Houdini was, you know, this was in the mid-1920s, and Houdini, you know, he can't do all the incredible escapes he used to do when he was younger. And, you know, this rivalry with Marjorie and going after the fraud mediums was absolutely his way of staying, you know, in the newspapers. He, you know, he recognized that, as you mentioned, the great promoters of his age. And, you know, there's this worldwide fascination with spiritualism. And, you know, he saw this rivalry with Marjorie as his way of staying topical. And, you know, it's interesting because you'd asked me earlier what distinguished Marjorie from other mediums. And, you know, I gave you examples of some of her incredible physical phenomena. But, you know, the other thing about Marjorie is that when she went into trance and she would lead these seances, the spirit she would manifest, her spirit control, was her dead brother, Walter. And Walter had a personality so different from Marjorie's. I mean, you know, here's this supposedly aristocratic Boston woman, and, you know, those days in that society, you know, women weren't supposed to wear or smoke. And, you know, she channeled her dead brother, who could be, you know, very crass and pugnacious. And, you know, his persona, his personality was so different from Marjorie's that, you know, one of these judges in the contest made the comment that she would have to be the greatest actress in the world to be able to reproduce the character of this ghost. You know, this ghost seemed almost more vivid than some of the live sitters in the room, and his voice would manifest from all parts of the room. But, you know, after Houdini died, the night that Houdini died, this group gets together and they have the seance, and Marjorie is leading it. And, you know, she channels the spirit of her dead brother, Walter. And, you know, Houdini, of course, is public enemy number one to the spiritualist. And, you know, there's some of the sitters, they're sort of in this aura of triumph. You know, they feel like, you know, the great enemy has died. And so Walter comes through, Marjorie's spirit control. And he says, actually, this is a great setback to spiritualism. This is a great setback to the psychic research movement, because Houdini brought so much publicity and so much national attention that, it brought important people into this sphere. You know, it brought public scrutiny into, the world of spiritualism. And so, Walter, basically made the comment that the death of Houdini is going to set psychic research back a generation, because nobody's going to be interested in it anymore, now that Houdini's out of the picture. Walter was basically right.
Now, we talked about the fact that there were these spirit cabinets where the mediums would go into, and they said they needed their privacy to be able to manifest this ectoplasm, which we know in a lot of the cases it was nothing more than cheesecloths and other things that they were doing. But Houdini had crafted a special cabinet for her to close her in, to keep her from being able to manipulate the bells and the horns and the different instruments and implements that were used in these seances. Once he started to implement this cabinet, was that curtailing her abilities? Was she suddenly unable to do and accomplish much of what she had done before, or was it still happening?
Well, put yourself back in the seance, Dave, that they held in August of 1924, and Houdini has constructed the spirit cabinet that looks something like a medieval torture device, and he claims it's fraud-proof. He claims that because, he'd held previous seances with Marjorie where she was able to produce her phenomena. He said she was cheating. But his goal in the second series of seances was to prevent her from producing anything. He wanted to force what was called a blank seance, which would mean there was no phenomena. So he put her in this cabinet. And, you're in a dark room with all these scientists, and they blink fans, and Houdini is controlling the Marjorie, through the enclosure and the spirit cabinet she's in, and he's claimed there's going to be no phenomena. And then all of a sudden, there is this piercing, wrenching sound, and the entire top of the spirit cabinet that was supposedly fraud-proof has just broken off the cabinet. This was one of the most controversial moments during these seances, because Houdini is saying that this is a fraud-proof cabinet and nothing's going to happen, and, none of Marjorie's psychic force is going to be evident anymore. And then all of a sudden, as I mentioned, that the top of this cabinet seems to just separate itself from the bottom. The short answer to your question is no, not at first. There's other things. One of Marjorie's tests was she'd be put in this cabinet and there'd be a bell box put out of her reach, and she would have to use her psychic force to make the bell box ring. And, the bell box did ring on at least one occasion. I don't want to give too much away, but, there were occasions where things happened that, weren't, I mean, you couldn't say they were irrefutably done by psychic force, but certainly, they didn't correlate with Houdini's claim that nothing was going to happen once you put her in that cabinet.
Was there, with all that was going on and how popular the spiritualist movement was and the fact that he was infringing on their ability to make money, was he ever dealing with death threats or violence against him because of his zealous nature in trying to debunk everyone?
Oh, absolutely. It was a very sensitive situation. You have spiritualism was considered a rising new religion. And so, there was this biblical context and this religious intensity to everything that was happening. And Houdini consciously identified with King Saul in the Bible. King Saul wanted to rid the kingdom of Israel of all the necromancers and psychics and mediums, but he's still seeking that one genuine medium. And eventually King Saul finds that medium, the Witch of Endor, who predicts that King Saul is going to die in battle the next day. And King Saul does die in battle the next day. And of course, Marjorie had predicted that Houdini would die. But so Houdini is receiving death threats. Marjorie is the avatar of the spiritualist movement. Conan Doyle calls her the center of American hope. You know, she has this devout following. You know, she is this considered a religious figure. And, you know, think about what's going on. You know, when a woman, usually these, not always, but very often these psychics for women, and, you know, they're considered, you know, in the spiritualist religion, almost Conan Doyle, you know, gave them this aura almost of, like, you know, Virgin Mary. I mean, they are giving birth to a spirit. You know, they're giving birth to an apparition, you know, through the secretion of ectoplasm. So, you know, there's this religious symbolism where you have Houdini coming into these seances and you know, the spiritualists think he's manhandling the medium, and Houdini is Jewish, and, you know, Conan Doyle considers him this great traitor because initially Conan Doyle thinks he's a friend to the spiritualist. So, you know, Houdini was considered by the spiritualists to be sort of the Judas to their movement. And, you know, there's, when you read in some of these psychic journals, there is, you know, a lot of anti-Semitic kind of aspersions that are directed towards Houdini. You know, here is this Jewish figure, you know, coming into these seances and, you know, doing all these nefarious things and, you know, interfering with this, you know, this religious ritual. And, you know, Houdini goes before Congress and he tries to get spiritualism. He tries to get a bill passed that will essentially make any kind of mediumship for profit illegal, along with any kind of divination, astrology. And, you know, the spiritualists show up en masse in Washington to confront them during his congressional hearings. And so, yes, you're absolutely right. He's receiving death threats. And eventually he's assaulted by a divinity student from McGill University in his dressing room in Montreal. You know, a very mysterious character who may or may not have been a member of the spiritualist movement, and he dies as a result of that assault.
Yeah, and I know there was quite a bit of controversy, and there's been some conspiratorial thoughts that perhaps some of the spiritualists had gotten together, witches had gotten together in order to curse Houdini at that time. And I believe quite a few people even tried to take ownership of that after he passed away.
Yeah, well, you know, what Houdini always said is, like, you know, these mediums have always claimed, you know, that I'm going to be killed, and one day they're going to be right. And he, after Houdini's death, absolutely, there was, you know, a lot of people saying that, you know, that the curse that had been placed on Houdini had, in fact, you know, proven to be his downfall. But Houdini, you know, took all this with a grain of salt. You know, it's interesting about Houdini because, you know, he had his own kind of superstitious tendencies. And certainly, you know, Walter Marjorie Spirit Control had said that Houdini would be dead within a year, and he was dead within a year. But I don't think that certainly there's also been speculation that, you know, spiritualists actually conspired to murder Houdini, and certainly I don't think that was the case.
No, I mean, the guy had an appendix rupture and died from sepsis, right?
Well, you know, it's you know, like everything with this story, there's a lot of controversy and a lot of mystery. The surgeons determined that Houdini died of trauma-induced appendicitis. So, in other words, Houdini's in a dressing room, and, you know, Houdini had always claimed he could take any kind of blow to the stomach. And as I mentioned, this divinity student, you know, comes into the dressing room and he challenges Houdini and he says, "I understand, you know, you have this cast iron stomach and you can take any kind of blow to the abdomen. Do you mind if I try you?" And Houdini, you know, he would accept any challenge. So he accepted this challenge, but before he could stand up and brace himself, this guy laid into him. And this was a divinity student who also had boxing training, you know, the strapping figure. And Houdini claimed he could transcend any kind of physical malady, and it's clear that he was hurt as a result of these blows to the stomach. And he went on stage, and, you know, days later he was performing his act, and he was fainting, you know, during and after shows, and he had a 103-degree fever. And eventually he finally checks into the hospital, and it's too late. He has peritonitis, and what the surgeons determine is that his blow to the stomach had actually burst his appendix. Now, I've talked to physicians who say that's impossible, and it may be one of these really strange coincidences where he just happened to have appendicitis at the same time that the assault took place. So nobody knows if he really did die as a result of that assault. But nobody really knows definitively.
Well, yeah, I thought the punch didn't actually rupture it. It was that took place days later that he ruptured. It was just strange timing, weird coincidence, if anything.
Well, the surgeons who and his physicians at the time believed that the punch had ruptured his appendix. But, as I mentioned before, that's a very tenuous kind of diagnosis. And most of the physicians I talked to today think that probably would be impossible.
Now, with all the research that you did on Harry Houdini and this kind of battle, what really surprised you about the information that you dug up?
That's a really good question. You mean on Houdini in particular, or anything pertaining to this story?
Right, on Houdini and anything pertaining specifically to this part of his life and story.
Well, I think what surprised me, I guess, was the authority that was bestowed on Houdini. You know, here is this guy who, had almost no education, who was a magician, and yet he was considered, the public gave him, bestowed on him so much credibility. He was considered more reliable than the scientists so far as determining, the legitimacy of these psychic mediums. And it was just, I knew, obviously, Houdini was a famous magician, of course, and a famous escape artist. But what I wasn't aware of was just the level of fame that he attained as, this expert on psychic thought and this expert on psychic research. It's just incredible when you think about what was going on. You have this psychic medium who, as I mentioned before, becomes one of the most famous. She becomes an icon of the jazz era. She's a psychic, she's a medium. And then, you have Houdini, who's also perhaps the most famous figure of the jazz age, and he's a magician. And so what surprised me is I don't associate the jazz era, or at least I didn't at the time, with occultism. And yet, you associate it, most people do, I think, with this, deity and decadence. And of course, it was a time when technology and science were becoming so pervasive. I wasn't aware when I started researching this book just what level this occult influence had taken during that era. It was an occult mania almost unlike any other that's never been experienced in modern times. So I think that was very surprising to me. And of course, one of the reasons it did become so popular was because of Houdini's involvement in it, and because of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. And another English spiritualist, a scientist named Oliver Lodge, Conan Doyle and Oliver Lodge came to America, and they brought the European fascination with spiritualism to America. Oliver Lodge, arrived right at the very beginning of the jazz era in 1920, and within a couple of months, Norman Rockwell is painting, a Ouija scene on the front of the Saturday Evening Post, on the cover of the Saturday Evening Post.
David, let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll continue with more of Houdini and his battle with the spiritual realm right after this. Well, thank you very much for joining me and hanging in for the evening. We've been talking Houdini for the first 2 hours of the show. Next 2 hours, Matt Wingert joins me to discuss Arthur Conan Doyle, the author of Sherlock Holmes and his interest in the occult and the supernatural. Conan Doyle and the Mysterious World of Light, 1887 to 1920. That's coming up for the remainder of the show. Right now, phone lines are open if you'd like to call with questions for our guest David Jayer about Harry Houdini, about Psychic Marjorie, and the cases that we've been discussing this evening. We'd love to hear from you. And if you love topics like this and you're interested in the strange and supernatural, then I encourage you to join me 5 nights a week, Monday through Friday, 9 p.m. to midnight Central Time, when I host Darkness on the Edge of Town, paranormal radio show, also known as Darkness Radio. You can check us out at darknessradio.com. That's darknessradio.com. And live stream our show. We are based in the Minneapolis, St. Paul area in the Twin Cities News Talk Station, AM 1130. You can stream our show live, and as soon as our show is over, you can continue your journey into the bizarre with George Norrie and Coast to Coast AM. So go check that out for all the links and information at darknessradio.com. Speaking of Coast to Coast AM.com, I don't know if you're aware of this, but there are some fantastic news sources and more right on our website. You can check in on all the strange and unusual happenings around the world by visiting coasttocoastam.com. Click on our news tab. You can find old and new stories alike. It is National UFO Day, so you can go read about that and find some remarkable stories that have been popping up regarding UFOs, monsters, myths, and more on the website. And become a Coast Insider. A one-year subscription is only 15 cents a day, and that gets you access to 5 years of our past archives and podcast shows. You can listen to all of the best in overnight talk radio and find out why we are the best in overnight talk radio. Check that out for yourself, coasttocoastam.com. When we come back, your calls, more from David Jayer, and more into the world of Harry Houdini here on Coast to Coast AM. We're back on Coast to Coast AM, where my guest, David Jayer, is discussing his book, The Witch of Lime Street, Seance, Seduction, and Houdini in the Spirit World. Let's go east of the Rockies. Stephen in Louisville, Kentucky, welcome to the show.
How you doing, sir?
Doing well.
You know, so speaking of witches, I actually had a personal experience of my own. I'm actually a private investigator in my hometown, and I've come across a group of women before who actually used to drink blood. Human blood, I'm not sure how they acquired it. Now, when they drank it, they would contort their bodies, and they would do really strange things. I'm not really sure what they were trying to accomplish, but that brings me to my question. What exactly is the extent of the supernatural power of a witch? And also my second question, is it possible that Harry Houdini could possibly still be alive?
All right. I don't know. Did you want to weigh in on any of that, David? Do you know much about real witches and what is the extent supposedly of their abilities?
It's not really, my area of expertise, but, you know, there was certainly during the period that I write about, during the 1920s, there was still the stigma in regard to witchcraft. You know, there's been a witch burned at the stake in Ireland, I believe, it's 20 years prior. So Houdini was fascinated with witchcraft. You know, he was researching witchcraft before he died. He was writing his book on witchcraft. Witches, and throughout history, have been described with various kinds of powers and. And often there's a malefic, dark connotation to witchcraft. But that certainly is not the case. I mean, with the kind of witchcraft that I know about today. So I would say that in Houdini's case, you certainly saw the dark side of it. And as I mentioned before, he tried to stigmatize Marjorie with that cast. I don't think Houdini is alive today.
Right. I don't think Houdini faked his death, if that's what you're asking, Stephen. The interesting aspect when you ask about what was the true power of witchcraft, we know that it was focused on things like the power of intent, the ability to set forth. And that's what a lot of these incantations and spells are. It's nothing more than like covered in the book, The Secret. But there's some famous stories involving the power of some witchcraft, and I'm trying to trying to recall, there's one famous one in around World War II where these witches, let's see, during World War II, it says here in November of 1941, these witches had gathered together because there was a coming airstrike. And I guess these witches were band together in order to try to stave them off, push them away from an attack. And what's it say? Oh, no, I'm sorry, 1944. I'm trying to find the bit in here. Duncan promised to stop conducting seances. However, she was arrested during another one in 1956, Edinburgh. Where's the article about it? I just had it here and it popped up. But these witches got together and somehow through their magic repelled an entire air attack. It just didn't happen, dispelled. So you might want to do some research on that. And, you know, what exactly is quote unquote magic? That's part of the whole aspect of the wonderment. Now, we know a lot of the witchcraft and witch trials that people were being held accountable for was nothing more than petty jealousy and the strangeness of the times, how quickly people were willing to jump on the bandwagon of devil worship or dark side. If somebody, you know, you happen to give somebody a dirty sideways glance and that day somebody in their family died, they automatically thought that you had something to do with it. And it was the stink eye or the dirty eye or the evil eye that you'd given them. And that would be enough to give you the stigma of being a witch. I just returned from Germany and the Czech Republic, Prague, where witchcraft was rampant. And they talked about how many people were put to death over nothing. If you just had a dispute and you made the claim of witchcraft, they would do horrific things to you. They would punish you and push you, break you to the point you agreed that you were a witch, and then they'd punish you and put you to death. You know, they believed that water was holy, so they would dunk you in water. If you floated, it was the holy water pushing the evil incarnation up to the surface to get rid of it. So if you floated, you were a witch. If you sank and drowned, well, then you were clear and your name would be cleared, but you were dead. So witchcraft is kind of a strange situation, but we know that there are people that have a strong belief system in Wicca, and it's an earth science and earth belief, and it's a very positive thing. And like anything, there's good and bad, there's dark and light, there's black and white, and they use that different type of ability. So I guess it's mostly what you believe in and the intent that you put forward into something. But then anybody that's picked up the book, The Secret, and has used that power of intention, I guess could be considered a witch in today's society. Let's go west of the Rockies. John in California. Oh, we lost the call. All right. David Jayer, my guest here, as we're talking about his book, The Witch of Lime Street, Seance, Seduction, and Houdini in the Spirit World. When he was making claims, calling her a witch, calling her things like that, you would think at that time, since we had gone much past the witch trials and that was out there, she would have some legal ramifications towards him trying to destroy her and leveling such big claims on her.
Well, you know, it's interesting because think about where this story is taking place. It's taking place in New England, you know, the very heart of what traditionally would be considered witch country. And Marjorie makes a statement that, you know, 100 years ago I was burned at the stake, and now they send Harvard scientists to examine me. You know, Houdini was very careful in regard to what he said about her. He would talk about what a seductress she was, but you know, a lot of the most damaging things that he had to say about her, he kept out of the press. And you know, he would say these things about her, and he would hire private investigators to try to find proof, you know, in regards to some of these very dark charges he was leveling against her in private. Houdini was very careful about that. It was clear to everybody what he meant. I mean, he meant that she was seducing all these scientists and she was sleeping with them. And, you know, again, that is what you accuse a witch of. You know, that's the very essence of witchcraft is seduction. And he considered her a mythic seductress. But he never, you know, it wasn't overt in the sense that he would go before the press and he would say, you know, she's having sexual relationships with every judge that has declared her genuine. He felt that way and he would imply it, but he wanted to say it outright.
It's fascinating, too, to the lengths this man would go, dressing up in costumes to go attend seances, to only halfway through pull off this costume and this kind of Scooby-Doo reveal and try to bust these mediums and explain what was going on. When he would do that and directly show this, were the other attendees appalled by him and what he was trying to do? Because, again, many of them were there in hopes of communicating with ones that they'd lost in the war or, you know, loved ones that were gone to them. There was this sense of peace that were given to a lot of people by having that communication. Were the attendees angry at Houdini doing these stunts?
Well, some of these seances that Houdini infiltrated, you know, could become very vitriolic because a lot of the people that would attend these seances were spiritualists who, you know, gave these mediums a great deal of credibility. Houdini also might be there with Pinkerton agents and other undercover agents who were going to arrest these mediums. Once Houdini, often what he would do is he would disguise himself as an old man, hard of hearing, who was trying to get in touch with a dead son or daughter or wife. And then at the moment where the medium, where Houdini sensed the medium was doing something fraudulent, he would whip out a flashlight and shine at this medium and catch them in fraud, and the medium would be arrested. And, spiritualists considered that a witch hunt because every city Houdini performed in, you know, he would infiltrate these seances, and the mediums and the spiritualists saw it as a kind of persecution, and, that they commented again and again that this is a modern-day witch hunt. There was, this is a time in the 1920s where there's the Red Scare, and, there's a sense that there's something pernicious encroaching on Main Street, whether it's
right.
communist or socialist or whether it's some sort of witch coven, and Houdini was really playing on that.
Let's go west of the Rockies. Edith in St. George, Utah. Welcome to Coast AM. What did you want to talk about?
Okay. I'm from Tampa, Florida.
Okay.
I was born and raised in Florida. Houdini was supposed to be in Tampa in 1941. I was just 16 years old. I have my picture. I have the paper and everything. Well, he was supposed to be in a bag or something to try to get out. It was nothing to do with the seance. Never even heard about the seance.
Right.
He was, and I'm standing there watching him try to get out of this thing, and it was weird. And us kids, we just wanted to know how he was going to do it. Never did see him get out.
Oh, you never did see him get released from that, really?
Nope. And I've got the paper, my picture's in the paper and everything, and this goes back when I was 16, and I'm 91. And I never even knew who Nene was a seance. In fact, I never knew anything about seance until I was 16, and my girlfriend's mother was a medium, and she scared the living daylights out of her daughter many times. She would run away from home.
Really, because of what she was doing, and
huh?
Interesting.
And
well,
and in Florida, go back in time. It was probably before your time. They were very, 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 very. The white people were very, very, very mean to me, to people, and I could never understand why. Growing up, why people had to be mean to anybody with a color that was Japanese, Chinese,
right? Black. Well, it was a different time, Edith. Thank you for calling in and sharing some time with us. It's fascinating to me, too, David, that here we are in 2016 and people are still uncovering information about Harry Houdini that they didn't even know. Many of them just realized that he was a magician without realizing to what extent his illusions and abilities were. And then some not even really realizing he ever did magic and illusion, that he was just known strictly as an escape artist. And then you have this whole other life where he was doing spiritualist shows and debunking them.
Right, yeah, Houdini, he wasn't, at the time, there were other, Thurston, many people considered a greater magician than Houdini. Houdini's fame really came from escape art. It's really incredible what he was doing, because when he did a straitjacket escape, there was no magic. Houdini would escape from a straitjacket, and he would do it in broad daylight, and it was an incredible feat. But there was no trick to it in the sense that he wasn't hiding anything, he wasn't concealing anything. He was just escaping from a straitjacket, and that's why, you know, his form of magic was so incredible. His escape art was so incredible, and why it had this heroic cast to it, because it was considered, so physically sensational. That's what really differentiated him from other magicians of the time.
Let's wrap up with one more caller. East of the Rockies, Tony in North Carolina, you're on the air. Tony, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, real quickly, what would you like to say before we go to break?
I lived with a genuine leech for 4 months.
And you were what? I'm sorry, say that again.
I lived with a witch for 4 months.
Okay.
And she was genuine. Get up middle of the night, 2:30, do the tarot cards and all. And she had the black book. She could read your mind.
Now, did you know she was a witch before you got together with her?
No.
No? Was that, did that unnerve you when you found out what she was able to do?
Not as much as when she told me I didn't find this out after I got the relationship with her, that she'd been married 6 times before.
Really?
Yeah. And, she had had a rough life, but she really knew the stuff, and, I couldn't handle any more of it after 4 months. I come back to a place I got and have had, and I live in a cabin in the mountains now with no cable, just radio and power.
Well, thank you for making us part of your life and listening to us, Tony. We appreciate that. We've only got about a minute left to share here, but you've got some exciting news. Now, you're working on a screenplay for this book, correct?
Yeah, I'm working on the film adaptation of The Witch of Lime Street. It's got a great director attached to it, Andy Muschietti, and a studio that's awesome, the film rights. And, what I'm doing right now is working on a screenplay.
That's great. Do you know when it starts going before cameras and actually filming?
Well, we have to, it'll be a couple more months before I complete the screenplay, and we have to get the film passed. So I this isn't going to be something that's coming out in the next year or so. But, we're definitely making developmental progress, and everybody's pretty excited about it.
Well, great. David, thank you so much for joining us tonight on Coast to Coast AM and sharing some insight into the strange world of Harry Houdini.
Okay, Dave. Thanks very much. It's great to be on your show.
And you can check out our site, coasttocoastam.com. You'll find information about David and his book. You can find links there, I believe, and more information. So go check out coasttocoastam.com. When we return after the top of the hour, Matt Wingert joins us to talk about Arthur Conan Doyle and the mysterious world of light. It's his dabbling in the occult. We'll find out all about that right here on the best in overnight talk radio. I'm Dave Schrader, and this is Coast to Coast AM.